Okay, we're ready. We're ready for the big meeting now. It's been a lot of preparation for this. From Moses not wanting to go, to him finally agreeing to go, to his failed first mission, or so it seemed. And then this very intense conversation with God. And then we get the lineage, and Moses is ready. And God warns him, he's not going to listen to you. But that's in order for me to bring about my miracles. Moshe is 80 years old. Aaron is 83 years old. These are no youngsters. According to the Sephorno, the reason we know their age is that we understand even though they were not exactly spring chickens, they devoted themselves to the mission. And the Ibn Ezra says the fact that their name is mentioned, their age is mentioned, shows you that there's a certain prominence because the other prophets do not have numbers attached. We don't know how old they are when the events happen. So this is a really important moment in Jewish history. The nation of Israel is about to be born, and this is the process that will set it into motion. The fourth reading begins on verse 8, chapter 7, verse 8. Vayemer Hashem al Moshe. God says to Moshe, V'yal Aharon and to Aaron, Lamer, saying, Ki yedaber aleichem pare. When the Pharaoh will speak to you, Lamer, he'll be saying, Tnu lachem meifes. Produce some kind of marvel, some kind of wonder. V'yomar to Aharon, you'll say to Aaron, Kach es matcha, take your staff, v'hashlech lefnei pare, and throw it before the Pharaoh. Yehi l'sanan, let it become a serpent. Now, how are we so sure that the Pharaoh is going to ask for a sign? Well, God knows. And because God knows, he's telling Moshe what to expect. The Medrash has this whole discussion about Noach, when Noach asked for a sign. And the Medrash says it's perfectly acceptable to ask for a sign. If even Noach asked for a sign, and that was after seeing all of God's miracles and seeing the great flood unfold, and he still asked for a sign, Pharaoh, who is no tzaddik, is certainly going to ask for a sign. That's human nature. It's self-understood. In fact, Rabbeinu Bachaya says that this is the way we are told to test. This is the litmus test for a prophet. You ask him for a sign. Now, we have a specific sign. We don't say, give us a sign and see if he can do the old serpent stick trick. Our sign is we ask him, tell us the future. And then we see whether everything did or didn't happen. But the notion of asking for a sign is actually not inappropriate. Rabbeinu Bachaya says this is what we call standard operating procedure. You claim that you're coming in the name of God, produce a marvel, demonstrate that we should take you seriously. The Eruv Chaim goes on to say that even if he doesn't ask for it, it's like he's asking for it. Believe me, he's looking for a sign. He'll say it, or he'll intimate it, and this is what you should do. Moifes, Rashi says, is an oat, a sign. So that you can demonstrate that there is wherewithal from the source of your shlichut. Somebody sending you, show me that I should bother listening to him. Now, even from the words of Rashi, it seems pretty clear this is not necessarily an appropriate thing. This is the sign, this is the marvel. Let's see. The marvel is Yehi l'sanan, that the stick or the staff should become a serpent. Now, this is really interesting because the word tanin has shown up before, but it didn't show up in the context of dry land. It shows up in the context of deep seas, sea monsters, sea creatures, some kind of overgrown eel. So Rashi says, no. L'sanin is a nachash. L'sanin is a snake. That's what it means. But the interesting thing is that previously, when the staff turned into a snake, it said a snake. And here it says nachash. So what is it? Rashi in Bereshis, when he has the word tanin, tells us it's a dog godel. The Ibn Ezra would like to suggest that it is a sea snake. And the Kli Yoker, kind of bringing both interpretations of Rashi together, suggests that it was a particularly fearsome sea monster snake. So this wasn't just a little rattlesnake. This wasn't just a diamondback. This was a monster. He threw his staff to the ground, and a monster emerged. Nachash, he says, a great and dangerous snake. I don't know. A boa constrictor? I wasn't there. But it was a very impressive demonstration. Okay? We got the dog and pony show. We're ready to travel. They come. And they did this. Doesn't even say if the Pharaoh asked for it. Did exactly what God said. Aaron throws his staff lifnei pari, before the Pharaoh, well, lifnei avadov, and before his servants, vayehi lisanan, exactly as God said, it turned into this great big snake. Now, it says, you tell Aaron, kachas matcha, take your staff. But actually, it's Moshe's staff. This is a special staff. This goes back to the days of Adam and Eve. This staff had the letters of the Tzach Adash Ba'achav, which is all of the plagues in acronym, already chiseled into it. But this is not Aaron's staff. So the Ibn Ezra says, when Aaron took possession, it was like his. Moshe passed it on to him. He personalized it. This is mine now. In other words, Aaron got personally engaged. He wasn't throwing somebody else's staff. This was his staff. He knew what he was doing. The Kli Yakar suggests that there was actually two serpents, not one. Moses' staff was thrown and Aaron's staff. Aaron just had a walking staff, nothing special. But both of them turned into serpents. At any rate, the Pharaoh is not impressed. He said, this is a sign. This is a marvel. You're trying to impress me with a good old stick snake trick? We all do this in Egypt. This is a joke. This is not a sign. Vayikra gampare lechachamim. The Pharaoh calls his wizards, lemachashvim, his necromancers, or whatever you want to call them, magicians. They did the same thing with their incantations. They threw their staffs and snakes emerged. Now you'll notice something very interesting. It says, Vayikra gam pare, also the Pharaoh. And then it says, Vayas gam heim. They too did the same trick. They produced the same marvel. So what is the meaning of the word gam? Gam shows up twice. According to the Paneach Raza, the Pharaoh was married to a witch. Not Stama witch. She was equal to him and all of the different wizards. And he called his wife. He said, honey, come and show these guys a few tricks. They think they're going to shake me down. And his witch wife arrived. And the next thing you knew, throws the staff down and the snake emerges. And then it says again, gam. What's the second gam? So here, very interestingly, the Chizkuni says, the school children know how to do this. This was like, he says, you're trying to impress me? My wife can do this. My children can do it. Everybody can do this. This is a marvel. What are you doing? I'm not moved by any of this. Vayishlichu ish mateo. They each threw their staff to the ground. Vayiyu lasaninim. And what did you get? A room full of monsters. A bunch of sea serpent snakes. The Torah says, Vayivla mate Aaron es mateisam. Then Aaron's staff swallowed those snakes. Now that was
it. Snakes, it says they're rods.
Right. Aaron's true. Very good. We'll talk about this in a minute. Aaron's staff swallowed the staffs. Now that was a little impressive. This the Pharaoh didn't bargain for. But no fear. The Pharaoh will be obdurate and strong. Vayechazak leiv paroi. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Strengthened, he didn't listen to them, although he was kind of impressed with that trick. He said, okay, that is quite marvelous. That's something. Kasha Dibra Hashem, exactly as God had told him, he was unmoved, not impressed. Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Vayivla mate Aaron, me'acha shechazar. This is after the serpents had been restored to their original stick or staff. That's when Venasa Mata, they became a Mata, Bola Eskulam. It doesn't say, as Nathan correctly pointed out, Vayivla Tanin Aharon Es Taninehem. It doesn't say Aaron's serpent swallowed their serpents. It says his staff did. So this was already a special miracle. This was after the staff became a staff, it swallowed the other staffs. That was impressive. The Pharaoh didn't know how to do tricks like that. Even his wife couldn't produce that. But the Pharaoh is unmoved, and he says, nothing doing. We're not budging from here. Nobody is leaving Mitzrayim. I will not be listening to you. And Hashem says to Moshe, V'yemen Hashem al Moshe, kovei leiv parei. The heart of Pharaoh is hard. Me'ein l'shalach ha'am. He's not going to send the people out. He's going to be restrained from doing this. Don't you worry. Now the fun begins. And so, subsequently, we will have in Siu, the first of the plagues took place in the summer of that year, the month of Tammuz. All of a sudden, the river will turn to blood, and that will be the first of the plagues. And then subsequently, every couple of weeks, another plague will hit Mitzrayim until the entire country is essentially dismantled. All right, let's talk about this business with the staff that swallowed the staffs. What can we learn from this? All of this has to be ultimately a lesson in Avodas Hashem. This is not just a historical curio. It's not just a cute story about a pharaoh and about an Aaron and about snakes and staffs and some kind of trick or marvel. But there's also a lesson here. So on page Kuf Lamed Zion, we have a little entry here, a teaching from the Rebbe, which is a lesson in Avodat Hashem, a lesson in the service of God. The service of God, as it were, can be broken into, let's say, two broad dimensions. There's the things you do with God, you and God, and then there's the things you do with other people. This is called Ben Adam LaMakom, between a person and God, and Ben Adam LaChaviro, between a person and their peer. Now, on some level, some of it doesn't seem to have to do with God at all. Giving charity to the person who is needy, providing comfort to a person who is bereaved. These are not godly things. That's literally Ben Adam LaChaviro. But there's a little bit, there's an area of overlap. And that is when you seek to influence somebody else to become closer to Hashem. You engage with others. We don't live as in our own little orbit, in an ivory tower. The Torah wants us to engage with others. So when you engage with others, there's a methodology. There's a Torah way of trying to influence other people. We necessarily should be a source of influence. We have to have a circle of influence. And here the Torah is teaching us something very important in that arena of life. Ka'asher Yehudi oisik b'hashpa al Yehudi acher. When a Yid's involved in influencing another Yid, what's the method? How does it work? How can you, from a Torah perspective, be most effective? B'derech klal, broadly speaking, tzarech hadover lehi'oseis b'shitas yemin mekarevus. It's the approach of our Rebbe and of Chassidus that we should reach out to others with love. Hashem gave us two hands. Almost none of us are equally balanced, which is pretty strange when you think about it. The human being is so sophisticated. And there are so many things that hayalaysia, God forbid, could go wrong in the gestation of a child. And children come out so perfect, and yet, for some reason, we're all off kilter. One hand is stronger than the other, more adept than the other. So this is not an accident. And we believe that's because the hands represent the way you engage with others. It says a person should reach out. There's a hand that you embrace. There's a hand that you give with. And there's also a hand that you defend yourself with, where you push away something which is negative. So you engage, you embrace, and you also push away. This is called in Torah verbiage, yemin mikareves, the right hand, which does not mean necessarily the right hand. It's only that most people's stronger hand is the right hand. If you're a lefty, it means your left hand. But the point is your stronger hand should be used, lekarev, to draw close, and smile, and your left hand should be used, doicha, to push away. So in every kind of engagement, there's positive and negative force. When you raise your children, sometimes you have to discipline them. You also have to show them a lot of love. Should it be 50-50? Torah says no. It always has to be more positivity than negativity. The hand that you draw close should be the stronger hand. The hand that you parry should be the weaker hand. You mean mekareves, smel doicha. So when I have to influence somebody, what's the best way to do it? With a cudgel, with a stick, guilt, threaten him you're going to go to hell, if you don't listen to me? Or should you emphasize the beauty of Yiddishkeit with positivity, with friendship, with love? And the answer is exactly that. Mitach darkei noyam, with a pleasant way, ba'ahava, with love, b'chiva, with a sense of endearment. And that's the way, generally speaking, we engage with others. If you want to bring others closer to Hashem, that's the way to do it. You embrace Him. Ach yeshna matzavim, there are sometimes circumstances. These are what we're going to call exceptional circumstances. The exception, not the rule. Shebehem ein breida. Sometimes you have no choice. You can't always love them. Sometimes they need tough love. Sometimes you have to linkit, you have to reach for the shita of smoil decha. Sometimes it's only when you ignore them, and it's only when you push them away, that you're going to be able to have some kind of positive influence. Sometimes people just take it for granted. And they take your friendship as a sign that what they're doing is okay. So here's something that everybody could relate to. And I would talk about, you know, influencing somebody in the area of Yiddishkeit, people get their backs up. Suppose that somebody is doing something bad to you. They're tormenting you, they're abusing you, they're disrespecting you, they're harming you. Do you hug them? You say, thanks, that was great. Can you hit me again, please? And there is a faith system like that, supposedly, that says if somebody hits you, then let him hit you again. We don't believe in that. We believe that self-defense comes first. Chayecha kaidman. If your life's being threatened, your welfare is being threatened, you have every right to do everything it takes to defend yourself. There's an interesting halachic question. If somebody hits you, can you hit him back? It's a negative prohibition in the Torah. You're not allowed to throw a punch. Violent assault is prohibited by the Torah. We see this in Moshe Rabbeinu when he saw Datan and Aviram fighting. He said, Rasha. He called him wicked because he threw a punch. He missed, but he threw a punch. He called him a Rasha. So the question becomes, what if somebody punched me first? So there's a dispute about this. Some say, he punched you first, punch him back twice as hard. You have the right to do that. Others say, you can parry. Why do you have to punch? Block the punches. And the consensus is, if you threw a punch back, you wouldn't be held culpable. But ideally, you should parry. You should block punches. The point being, of course, not everybody is going to respond to love. Sometimes, if the person is behaving very badly, the only way is going to be tough. That's the only way. Well, imagine a child does something very inappropriate. Say, ah, you're such a sweetheart. I love you so much. It was not so nice what you just did. So nice what he just did. He just tried to drown his brother. Well, it wasn't so nice. Next time you should be a little nicer. No, I think a good spanking is in order to try to drown his brother. And try to do something which is very harmful, you need to discipline him. So this is the point of smoil deicha. Sometimes we push away. Sometimes it's discipline. Sometimes it's harsh. Sometimes what's required is lishaber ulevatel asazula. Sometimes that person who is way too comfortable in your life needs to be broken and pushed away. Only when they're ignored will you get some kind of response. Sometimes you have to even swallow them up, euphemistically. Swallow him up. Nothing left of him. What we call ha'alama mukhletas shomatsyus. You have to totally negate this person's self-importance, this person's self-reliance and confidence. So the Rebbe says that's an exception. Sometimes it has to be done. But here are two important rules that you must always deploy when you're going to employ these methods. Number one. Ha'pa'ula tzricha le'yosei sayedei mate aharon. Whose staff did it? Whose staff swallowed the other staffs? According to the Kli Yakar, both staffs turned into snakes. Yet it's very clear whose staff swallowed. Va'yivle mate aharon. And even according to the opinion that it was the same staff, Aaron took possession of it first. What's the emphasis on Aaron? Aaron, the Mishnah tells us, was oyhev shalom v'roidev shalom. He was the one who loved peace. He pursued peace. He was oyev es habriyes. He loved all those, even if they were just called creatures of God, their only redeeming quality, being created by God. Umekarvan l'Torah. He sought to bring them closer to the Torah, as the Mishnah in the end of the first chapter of Masechet Avot says. Rak Adam Shehu Chader Kalkulei Bechesed O Ba'avas Yisrael. It's only the person who is filled with love. That person who's like Aaron HaKoin. Yochel Lehishtamish B'derech Zu. Only he could use, he could be the one to do, deliver the tough message. Shem Sha'av Az Muftach Lanu. Then we can be certain, Shehu Eise Zeis Rak Mitech Kavana Chiyuvus, that he's doing something negative in a positive, with a positive intention. There's no meanness mixed in. There's a very interesting story of a yeshiva student in the late 1950s in the Lubavitch yeshiva who basically fell away from observance. A student in the yeshiva wasn't putting on his tefillin, wasn't eating kosher, couldn't keep him in yeshiva. And who is going to have to kick him out? Who's going to deliver the message? So there was a Rosh Hashiva, one of the Rosh Hashiva, who was a particularly loving fellow. He never had children of his own. Very loving person. And the students for him were like his own children. And he had to deliver the message. And it was very hard for him. It broke his heart. And he came over to the student. And he said, I need to talk to you. And he hugged him. And he kissed him. And he had tears in his eyes. And he said, we know such and such. We have no choice. I'm so sorry, he said. I'm so sorry to have to do this. There's no choice. We have to send you. We have to show you the door. But the moment, he says, you re-embrace this, you're welcome. You call me any time of the day or night. And he did it with so much love that this boy did fall away from yeshiva, but eventually came home to Yiddishkeit. And he said the only thing that brought him home was the love that Rabbi Liss showed him. This rabbi named Liss. This Rabbi Liss. He said he showed him such love. He showed him such compassion. He felt so bad for having to discipline him that that's what brought him home. That's what the Rebbe is saying here. Sometimes you got to swallow him up. Sometimes you got to use the toughest of love, but only if it's Mata Aaron. And the second lesson is, it's not just the staff of Aaron, it's a staff. What does that mean? Yesh li'izor shalelev goya bezulas mitech kas v'hisrakshus. Don't do it out of anger. Never discipline out of heated passion, which would be like a tanin, like a snake, like a serpent who hisses. Ella mitech ipok ulaloi ma'uravos rikshis, without any kind of passion whatsoever. No anger, no emotion. You're doing it, if there is an emotion, it's one of contriteness. If you're not lashing out. Only when the serpent becomes a staff again can you then swallow him up. And so the way the Pharaoh was pressured way back when is the way we have to learn how to influence others, even when you have to do the most difficult of circumstances, when you got to do the smile, the left stuff, when you got to be negative, even then there's a positive way to express that negativity. And that's a lesson we can all learn well.